The Senate State and Local Government Committee will come to order. Today is Monday, March 4th, 2013, and I'm going to turn the gavel over to Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Chair Pappas. And I just would like to mention before we get started that we have a lot of testifiers today, and we want to make sure that everybody who is here to testify has an opportunity to be heard respectfully by all those in attendance, by all the committee members. And so I will ask for you to make sure whether you are listening to testimony that supports your position or is against your position, that we all remain quiet so that we can all hear everybody's testimony. Thank you. Go ahead, Senator Pappas.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And we're in a collaborative relationship here, Senator Eaton and I. So the first thing I would like to do is offer the A3 amendment, which is an author's amendment, and it would put the bill into the shape I would like it.
Senator Pappas has moved the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could we have nonpartisan staff walk us through the differences between the original bill and the A3 amendment?
Madam Chair?
And Senator Pappas.
Senator Peterson, I'd be happy to do that. I plan to go through the bill once we've adopted my amendment. It's an author's amendment. If you would give me that courtesy, I'd appreciate it.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, the question is on the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And what Senator Eaton and I have done here is we've actually merged our two bills, Senator Peterson, and that is what the Delete All Amendment does. The purpose of this legislation is to allow two groups of workers to organize under Chapter 179A of the Public Employment Labor Relations Act, known as PELRA. The goal in both situations for service recipients is to provide better access, better quality, and more stability. The goal for service providers is to improve their wages, to allow access to better training, and provide fairness. I'm going to keep my comments to that, as brief as that for now, because we have a lot of people who want to testify, and I think that more of the goals and objectives and purposes of the bill will become more clear through the testimony. And to start with, I'd like to turn it over to my co-author, Senator Eaton, for her comments.
Thank you, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to address my original bill, which was SEIU and the home care providers. And I want to talk about, I work in the community as a community mental health nurse, and I run into lots of family situations where they would not be able to be in the home if it were not for their home care providers. A lot of cultures are really dependent on it, as they do not allow or want other people other than family to be taking care of their loved ones. And so the home care world is or services are what make their families work in their home. And with the funding, I think I see a lot of them putting in like 20, some of them 24 hours a day. They're like at the bedside. And they get paid for 2 or 3 hours a day, like several days a week or something. It's not really comparable to the time they actually put in. So I welcome this opportunity for these people to get better representation.
And we know the same thing, as Madam Chair, is true with the family daycare providers, is that they work long hours for low pay without benefits. And I just wanted to be clear on this legislation, which is called the Family Child Care Providers Representation Act, is that it really only involves family daycare providers that take the child care subsidy. That are the ones that are asked to the opportunity to organize. That if you only take private pay families and don't take the subsidy at all, then this the union option is totally an option to you. You can join if you want, but if you don't take child care subsidy, then you're under no obligation to join the union or be part of the fair share system. Just to go through the bills quickly so members are familiar, Section 2 on page 1 is the definition section of Article 1. Subdivision 3 says that is the definition of exclusive representative, and that's an employee organization that's been elected and certified. Which union is going to be certified to represent the unit under 179A.42? A family child care provider would include either the licensed or the legally unlicensed family child care providers. Section 3 says that these family child care providers have the right to organize, but they are considered public employees only for purposes of organizing and meeting and negotiating with management and budget, but not public employees for any other purposes. They have the right to arbitration, and they do not have the right to strike. Subdivision 3 is the certification process. So in terms of to determine whether the union would be certified, the commissioner shall utilize a list of family child care providers that Human Services has already, and they're looking at the most recent 12-month period. And by July 1st, 2013, all family child care providers who have been paid for providing child care assistance services to participants within the previous 6 months. So this is the group that we're going to be looking at. Once the group that wishes to represent the family providers, the union, has at least 500 family child care providers on a card, a certification card, then Human Services would give them that list within 7 days. And then they have to have another list that's at least 10% of that list before an election would be called. And the election would be by mail ballot. So we're looking at now line 2.26. And the family child care providers eligible to vote in that election are those who are on that list, which is updated monthly, and receive child care subsidy. Subdivision 7 on 2.32 says that they have the right to meet and negotiate the state and the representative of the family child care providers on issues around grievance, child care assistance reimbursement rates, and grievance issues, and terms and conditions of service. And the governor or the governor's designee, which would be management and budget, is authorized to enter into agreements. But any of those negotiated agreements must be submitted to the legislature to be accepted or rejected, just as we do with other state employee contracts. Jumping down to subdivision 11 is called rights. And this says that parental rights to select and deselect their family child care providers or the ability of family child care providers to establish the rates they charge to parents is not to be interfered with. So your relationship with a family child care provider's relationship with the parents and their negotiation over rates is totally up to them. Also, the state agency can communicate with any citizen or organization concerning family child care legislation that cannot be interfered with or any rights or responsibilities under federal law. Then Section 4 is the severability section. Article 2, then, is the request to organize by the personal care attendants. And this was Senator Eaton's bill. We move to Subdivision 2, and this is, again, their right to organize under 179A, the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. And it says, again, that they're not public employees for any other purpose. They're not public employees for the state health care system, for the state pension system, and they also do not have the right to strike. Subdivision 3 says the state has the responsibility to negotiate with the representative of the providers. But no agreement between the state and the provider's representative should interfere with the rights of the participant or the participant's representative, so the person receiving the care or their the person who has their power of attorney or, you know, their parent or their guardian or whatever, they have total rights to select, hire, direct, supervise, or terminate employment of the individual provider. And once again, any agreement reached must be submitted to the legislature to be accepted or rejected. Subdivision 6, strikes are prohibited. They do have the right to arbitration. And we're using the whole process of the list again. The Department of Human Services puts together a list. The union comes to them with at least 500 individual providers that want to be represented. They are given the entire list. They are free to contact people on that list. And once they reach the 10% threshold, then there would be an election. And the people who vote in the election then would determine whether they wanted the union or not, in accordance with the current PELRA law. Section 2 is the definition section, which is usually in the beginning of the bill, but is not in this case. And it just says who is covered. What's a covered program? What do we mean by direct support services? What's a personal care assistance services? Who are the providers? Then we move to 630, which is the Workforce Council that's being established, the Quality Self-Directed Services Workforce Council. And again, the purposes of this council is to ensure that, as it's called, that the users of personal care attendants have quality services. So the Commissioner of Human Services will be the chair, and the 11 members will be appointed by the governor. And there should be 6 current or former recipients of direct support services. A legal guardian or legal representative should be on the council, 1 member of the State Council of Disability, 1 member of the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities, and 1 member of the Minnesota Board of Aging. And the duties of the council are in Subdivision 8 and 7.19, and those duties are replicated in Subdivision 11 as also being the duties of the Department of Human Services. On 9.23, we have, again, the list process. The Department of Human Services puts together the list that then the council would have access to and the group seeking to be the union would have access to so that they could then contact those people to find out if they'd like to be part of the union. Once they reach the 10% threshold, then an election is held, and then the majority of those voting in the election determine whether there would be a union or not. So, Madam Chair, that was a very brief summary, and I'm actually requesting that, since we have so many testifiers, that we then hear from the testifiers. I think a lot of the members' questions will be answered by the testifiers, and then if they're not, we can come back to the table and you know, deal with those questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Pappas and Senator Eaton. I'd like to move forward with the testifiers. The first testifiers will be from the home health care workers aspect of the bill. The first testifier is Darlene Henry. I'd like to also call to the table Shaconica Johnson, and I hope I said that correctly, and Rochelle Turan. So if we can have 3 people at the table prepared to testify, I would appreciate it.
Do we need to move the chairs? Oh, we're okay. Okay.
And Ms. Henry, if you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Hello, Chair and members. My name is Darlene Henry. I'm 23 years old, and I'm from Rosemount. About 2 years ago, my mother had a series of 3 small strokes, which turned our lives upside down. Everything had changed. She now needed to be driven to her doctor appointments and needed someone to come in with her to those appointments who could remember important details for her since her memory had gotten worse. She needed reminders to take pills, keep appointments, where to go in the grocery store, and to eat. She needed help preparing meals so she could save her energy for other important tasks. During this time of need, before I became her PCA, I missed half of my work days each week to care for my mother and was almost fired for being so unreliable. With little bills at the time, it was very doable, but to imagine other people going through the same thing and trying to support their families and pay bills made me shudder. My mother chose me to be her PCA because she knew me. I had been with her during every hospital stay, which there were many. I could have chosen to stay with my other better-paying jobs, but how can you look at your parent, let alone anyone, and tell them no? So here I am now, with three jobs, work at minimum 70 hours a week, with low wages and no benefits to show for it. I work so much because I have a dream of owning my own house someday, in the near future. A dream that seems unrealistic with my situation as it stands. When I became my mother's PCA, I discovered there was absolutely no real training to prepare me for such a job. There was no CPR training, which I needed desperately, after already having to call the ambulance for my mother multiple times in the past. I realized the pay was terrible for a career that I considered long-term and difficult. I could have easily suggested her go into a nursing home, but I knew if I were in her shoes, leaving my own home before my time would have been heartbreaking, let alone extremely expensive. Not to mention she did have to be in assisted living for a few weeks after a surgery and hated and complained about it the whole time. She had never been so miserable in her life. It took me a while before I realized these issues, especially because I thought I was alone. But I'm not. There are many other home care workers out there who struggle as I do to get by or save for the future. Right now, as it stands, I have no voice. I have no say what happens in my career. I don't even have the right to choose to form a union, which is what I've realized the best decision we have. By forming a union, we can fight to get better wages, paid time off, and training. Mine and my mother's future, as well as everyone else's, could only get better. So I want to thank the legislators for introducing this bill, because it gives me, my family, and my fellow home care workers hope. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Henry. Ms. Johnson, please introduce yourself and begin.
Madam Chair and Committee, good afternoon. My name is Shaquanica Johnson, and I'm a personal care attendant. I've been in health care for about 18 years, and I've worked with a wide variety of clientele. I'm telling my story with the hopes of improving the conditions for not only my clients, but for home care workers as well. I became a home care worker as a stepping stone to my nursing career because I'm passionate about caring for people. It makes my day when I hear the client of my family tell me that without my assistance, that they will not be able to do things in the community or be able to work their jobs, as they would have to stop to care for their loved one. As a home care worker, I help people with disabilities live productive and independent lives. I help with transportation, feeding, bathing, and medical appointments. This may sound like basic tasks, but they are the fundamentals of living a secure and independent life. For people not with disabilities, we often take these things for granted. I know this because I suffered two strokes last year and had to relearn all of the basic tasks, all of the basic tasks that I helped others with for years. I think one of the scariest things in my experience is that, give me a moment, please.
Yes, certainly.
I've committed to the work as a PCA or home care worker, but not being able to be provided with insurance through my job. I've been given low wages, forcing me to choose between paying my bills and feeding my children. I am not allowed sick leave or vacation time, and I do not have access to the training and the certification that is necessary to provide quality care and enabled me to climb the career ladder. It saddens me to know that I'm not the only person in my situation, but I believe that if we come together, we could give workers and clients a voice and a sense of security. I ask that you support this bill today to help improve the clients and to provide us with training opportunities for myself and other workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Thank you for testifying. And now I'd like to have Rochelle Turan, and then perhaps could we have Roger Auerbach come to the table? He will be testifying next. Ms. Turan, please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Rochelle Turan, and this is my son, Taylor, and I have two other sons that are in the audience as well. We are here today to, first of all, thank you for the services our family receives from Hennepin County and the state of Minnesota. Next, we want to share with you how much my family values the services that we receive for Taylor and his younger brother, Marshall. Taylor is 16 and has a developmental disability, and Marshall is 12 and has severe autism and developmental delay. My two sons need a lot of support with basic living skills such as toileting, eating, and hygiene, as well as someone to entertain them full time. My son Marshall is nonverbal and has problem behaviors such as aggression, destruction of property, fecal digging, and vomiting. As you can imagine, these behaviors put a lot of strain on our family daily. My husband and I are fortunate to have help from direct care workers who work in our home to assist us in caring for our sons so that we can meet the needs of the family. We also have a typically developing son who is 14. Without this service, we are challenged with keeping the boys safe, meeting their daily needs, maintaining our home, and allowing my husband to go off to work each day so we can financially meet the needs of our family and pay our fair share of taxes. On a daily basis, we do an average of 3 to 5 loads of laundry every day of the week. My husband comes home from work to cook dinner along with the maintenance of the house structurally, for example, dents in the walls, yard work, etc. I keep the inside of the house clean, take the boys to doctor appointments, communicate with the schools, and do necessary paperwork for the boys, along with maintaining our budget, collecting data on how the boys are keeping, are progressing so we know what to focus on to teach them skills in our home. I also act as manager to the direct care workers. These workers help with basic daily care, eating, collecting data on toileting and behavior problems, helping keep them busy with activities full-time to decrease the problem behaviors, and also helping me take them on outings in the community. These workers need to have an incredible amount of patience, along with the skills needed to help decrease the problem behaviors our sons have. Believe me, they do not have an easy job. Without the help of these skilled people coming into our home, we would be forced with the decision of how to care for our children. I grew up in a family where I watched my single mom have to make the decision to send my brother to a residential facility away from our home because of the severity of his disability and the lack of support to families in their homes in those times. And please believe me when I say I was devastated as a young girl by the experience, as he was and still is the center of my life. These direct care workers allow family members not to have to make the decision that I watched my mother go through. This is what makes home care workers so valuable. Home care workers are incredibly important to thousands of Minnesotans, yet their profession is often not recognized by our society, and they currently have no right to form a union. I stand with home care workers who want to bring a collective voice to the decisions being made about our home care programs, the people who receive these critical services, and the workers who provide them. Their collective voice would also benefit me and my family by raising the overall standard of care. If we are not able to ensure home care workers are treated fairly by the state and paid living wages that they can support a family with, there will continue to be fewer and fewer skilled workers, which would hurt my family greatly. Let's solve the care gap now and stand together with home care workers and their right to form a union.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Turan. And now, Mr. Arbach, can you please introduce yourself?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Roger Auerbach. I'm an independent consultant on long-term care services. The focus of my consulting work is to help federal, state, and local governments, providers, consumers, and advocacy organizations develop systems which develop quality, cost-effective services responsive to consumer needs and preferences. Most of my work is directed towards building state capacity for home and community-based services, providing consumers and their families understandable, reliable, and timely information from which to make choices for care. Since I began consulting in 2001, I have provided substantive advice for clients working in 47 states, including Minnesota. Prior to consulting, I was director of Oregon Senior and Disabled Services Division, responsible for all publicly long-term care programs for older adults and adults with physical disabilities. It was in this capacity that I first confronted the issues surrounding the supply and quality of home care workers. The state of Oregon, like Minnesota, has a long history of supporting individuals in home and community-based settings. The state developed a variety of community-based residential care programs, including a popular client-employed provider program funded under Medicaid home and community-based waiver, providing personal care and other in-home services. Today, over 80% of Medicaid beneficiaries needing long-term care are receiving those services at home or in the community. And about half of them are receiving services delivered by independent home care providers and home care agencies. My first recognition, really, of this issue of recruiting and retaining quality home care workers came not too long after I started on the job in Oregon, where the state made the decision to raise the minimum wage for all employees of the state. And all of a sudden, the home care providers were only being paid 5 cents an hour above the minimum wage. Didn't take long before I realized that there was a big problem trying to recruit and retain workers at 5 cents above minimum wage. In the year 2000, I was introduced to an innovative method to address the issues of maintaining a sufficient supply of quality home care providers, what Oregon's called a home care commission. The Oregon Home Care Commission was created to provide referrals of qualified home care providers to the elderly and people with disabilities, provide training, opportunities for home care workers and consumers, establish qualifications for home care workers, and establish and maintain a registry of qualified home care workers. I was involved in the initial discussions of how this commission was to be implemented and have followed its progress and that of similar entities in 8 other states. Entities such as the proposed Quality Self-Directed Services Workforce Council can be a great benefit to the state in many ways. First of all, it can serve as a focal point for the state to address a vital issue for its citizens. Individuals needing long-term services want those services delivered in their homes. This is a well-documented, rapidly growing trend. Every survey I've seen shows that at least 90% of the people wish to receive services at home for as long as they possibly can. Additionally, it's very clear that the cost of services is much more expensive in any other settings other than the home. Nationally accepted data show that in-home services and supports for older adults and adults with physical disabilities is 40% the cost of institutional care. These home care councils have provided support systems for both consumers and workers to make it easier for consumers to hire qualified workers and help direct their own care. As I will explain further, councils have created worker registries which consumers can access to find a qualified worker. Councils have also been very successful implementing training programs for both workers and consumers. Workers are learning valuable skills from these training and are becoming very knowledgeable about specific issues such as dementia. Consumers are being trained to be good employers and learn communication skills that help them further train their worker on how they best want their care delivered. Let me further address some of these issues. The registry of qualified independent providers. All of the state and county councils have developed and maintain a registry which matches consumer needs to worker skills and availability. Most employ matchable databases and all help publicly supported consumers to obtain the most appropriate provider. As many independent providers are often recruited from family and friends, there are also many consumers do not have this ability to hire family and friends but need the registry. Providers also who are not working are able to access the registry to be able to find out about job opportunities. Consumers have been using these registries for many years and have found them very useful. Without such a registry and without knowing someone who might do the necessary work, consumers would need to advertise for a worker and have a huge amount of screening themselves. This vital process is greatly simplified and streamlined by using the registry. On a personal note, I had the opportunity to take care of my mother at the end of her life and lived in a state where there was no such registry. And I can tell you from personal experience, trying to find a worker qualified to care for a loved one at a crucial time. Basically, it was a choice between being at home and having her go to the nursing home, kicking and screaming and objecting violently. And with all my knowledge of all my years in this business, it was an incredibly hard thing to do. Having a registry to be able to actually go online and be able to find a list of people willing to work who met and were qualified to meet the needs of my mother would have been so much easier. Training for workers and for consumers. There have been training programs developed all over the country. Consumers believe that they have great skills in training their workers to do and deliver the training as and the services as they want. But there is certain training that is very, very hard, really, and best delivered by in a training session and not by an individual, because it has more to do with medically oriented tasks. The impact on the workforce capacity and quality, there have been lots of studies. I know that soon, maybe even as soon as next week, someone will be in the state who did a major study on the workforce, what happens when you, in fact, raise wages, when you actually focus your attention on training, when people come together and look at this need and be able to fulfill this need by supporting this workforce, does two things, of course. It saves money for the state, and it keeps people where they want to be in their home. One of the major issues is quality, one of the major ways to measure quality is consumer satisfaction. Most states use some kind of sampling to survey what consumers think about their services. In Washington State, where they have this type of system, 72% of the consumers rated their independent provider services as excellent, and another 22% rated them as good. In Massachusetts, 97% of the consumers felt safe and respected by the people who cared for them. In conclusion, workforce councils provide an effective and an essential focal point for addressing a key issue in long-term care: attracting and maintaining a sufficient number of home care workers. Consumers want to receive services in their homes. They want to have control over the way service is delivered. They want to be able to access a worker when they need one. Consumers want workers who have access to skills training, are fairly compensated for their work, and receive health and workers' compensation benefits. They want workers who will stay working for them for as long as possible. A state can do this for consumers and provide public support for this process through a workforce council. Supporting this concept helps the state meet the needs and preferences of consumers while supporting services in the most cost-effective environment in one's own home. Recently, there was a study done specifically in Minnesota by the nationally recognized Paraprofessional Healthcare Institute. It was released just in August. It showed that over the next 10 years, through 2010 through 2020, the need for home care workers in Minnesota will increase by almost 50,000 individuals. Among their recommendations were increasing wages and benefits, increased training, and the creation of advancement opportunities for these workers, and developing what I just referred to before, a matching service registry, as the most effective way for program participants and workers to find each other. I appreciate very much the opportunity to be here today, be happy to answer questions, and I'm sorry for this lengthy testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Auerbach. And now I'd like to, and thank you, all of you at the table, for your testimony. I'd like to move on to the next testifiers and bring up Elliot Side, and I hope I'm not saying that incorrectly. I apologize if I am.
Madam Chair, I apologize if I get into your plan. I couldn't help but to see a family that is here with a younger brother who's been taking care of his brother as his mom and his brother come to testify. And I would like to know if I could hear him say his name and to have a picture taken by the photographer so that he can take it home. I don't know if they are leaving now, but I just, I have two boys at home, and I just couldn't help to see how incredibly close they were and how he was taking care of his brother. And I thought that we should recognize that and mention that. And I think I would like to know his name and his age, if he would like to come to the microphone.
Yes, if you'd see Ms. Turan, if you'd like to just let us know more about your family.
Hi, Madam Chair and the committee members. I'm sorry, my son just left outside to get his brother a drink. He was being impatient. So his name is Ethan, and he's 14 years old. He just turned 14, actually.
Your younger son?
He's the middle son. Okay. My younger son is Marshall. He was the one who's making noises.
Okay, okay. Thank you. I thought that was it was worth mentioning. I was paying attention to how much he cared about his brother, and I'm sure how important he is in his life. So
he's good at stepping up to the plate most of the time. He has a difficult relationship in the family. He has a difficult place in our family. So,
thank you. I don't know if he would like to have a picture taken, but I think it would be good for him to have it so he remembers today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tran. And now, as I was saying, if we could have the testifiers come to the table, Elliot Seide, and I'm Seide. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. Jennifer Munt, Clarissa Johnston, Lisa Thompson, and let's see. Well, we'll take the first four here, and then we'll see who we have left. Please proceed with your testimony. Introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Elliot Seide. I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 5. Madam Chair and members of the committee, this legislation matters to AFSCME and all working families. It's about the human right to choose whether or not to have a union and a voice on the job. This is the same way that teachers, nurses, and social workers have organized across Minnesota for decades. Child care providers and home care workers deserve nothing less. Child care providers are uniting to advocate for quality care that parents can afford. We share common interests with the legislature. First, all of us want to give working parents peace of mind that their kids are healthy, learning, and safe in the care of a well-trained provider. Secondly, we want to prepare kids for success in school and in life. And by the way, I'm now the parent of a 26 and 23-year-old, but when they were young, they were at family child care providers. We all want to improve quality and affordability for families, and that's the third point. And fourthly, we should all want to stabilize the profession and reduce turnover by giving providers a stronger voice in decisions that affect their work. 16 states, Madam Chair and members, recognize the right of child care providers to bargain collectively with the state. There is nothing stopping Minnesota. Union providers have helped other states improve training, provide more consistent care with less turnover, increase quality and affordability for families, and ensure on-time payments for providers. Collective bargaining is a partnership. It's a partnership that will help the state maximize its investment in helping working parents to access quality child care. With your support, home-based providers can help the children in their care be ready for kindergarten and success in life. Child care providers deserve respect for doing one of the toughest and most important jobs imaginable, helping to raise our children. Today, you will hear testimony from several members of Child Care Providers Together, AFSCME, professionals who are experienced, smart, dedicated, and loving. They want a union. They've been struggling for 8 long years to get one. Today we need your help. All they're asking for is the right to vote and then the right to be able to represent themselves in a bargaining process. Thank you very much. And I turn it over to Lisa Thompson to speak.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, may I ask Mr. Seide a question?
Can we hold questions still in? Can you make a note and,
sure.
And you
That's
can
fine.
Ask Mr. Seide a question later? Thank you. Ms. Thompson, please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Thompson. And I thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come before you today to testify in support of Collective Bargaining Act. Now, it seems we've spent the last couple of years educating legislators about family child care and the importance of our job and the struggles of our world. But today, I come before you to bring the voices of members of child care providers together from all reaches of the state who support this bill and who would rather be where they are right now, and that's taking care of Minnesota's children. Now, I've been providing licensed family child care in St. Paul for nearly 20 years, and I'm also proudly serving as president of Child Care Providers Together, Local 3400. As diverse as our child care community is, there are three things that we all seem to have in common, and these three things are that we're passionate about this work, that we need support to do our jobs well, and we know we could improve the child care system by engaging our expertise and by working together. Now, one of the best parts of having been involved with this movement from the beginning is that I have witnessed firsthand the development of child care unions in other states. In some places with limited success, and in others like Oregon and New York, it's just been incredible what providers working together with support of their union have been able to achieve. And now, I didn't just read this by way of an internet search, or I didn't gather bits and pieces from social media rumors. I know about these successes and improvements, firsthand knowledge through the ongoing professional relationships I've had the opportunity to build with other providers from those states by attending national child care conferences and child care union conventions. These women and men who are leaders in our field have the same vision for what the profession of family child care as a whole can and should be. Now, this does not take away from or intrude upon or invade the beautiful things that happen in family child care homes. It's quite the contrary. The systemic foundation, the systematic foundation of support that a union for our field will bring will in countless ways make the business side of family child care less burdensome so that we can concentrate on the caregiving side of our profession. Now, 2 years ago, a reporter asked me if parents might expect to pay more if family child care providers were allowed to form a union. And you know, until that very moment, the prospect had never even crossed my mind. And that is because I know that what parents pay me is between me and that parent. We know parents can't pay more, but we also know that we can't work for less. And for 5 years previous to that, I had been working with other providers. We'd been working with AFSCME to help identify and figure out ways for providers to lower the cost of providing care. And I was witnessing how providers in other states were doing just that. I have to admit, it still continues to boggle my mind that a media outlet's push for ratings on that single day has kept this one misconception in the headlines for all this time. Now, family child care is a business, but it is a business unlike others. I remember listening to a former executive director of the Federal Child Care Bureau during a workshop at a national child care conference that family child care is unlike other free markets because we can't increase our sales, hire more employees, work longer hours, or take on more clients if we want to raise our household income. We're left to make very tough and personal choices. We must have a better way to control our costs and empower ourselves. And better ways than just recycling paper towel rolls for art projects or allowing our own children to go without health insurance so as not to increase the fees to the parents that we serve. Now, many providers feel the weight of this isolation and the challenges, especially in greater Minnesota, where services that are available in some areas are just non-existent. We shouldn't have to be left to fend for ourselves or be dependent on the kindness of an occasional pot of money. Now, the nursing and teaching professions were historically minimized as women's work, caregiving work, and unimportant until they were able to join together as a union and build for themselves the kind of things that they were able to achieve as a group and lift the profession. Now, this bill simply gives child care providers the choice to work together as a union.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Thompson. And please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Clarissa Johnston. I have owned and operated a family child care business in the city of Mounds View for 26 years. I named my business Rainbow Kids because I include the whole spectrum of children in my care, from brown-eyed children to blue-eyed children, from gifted children to the special needs children, to the children who are given too much and the children who don't own a coat. One of the important aspects of my business is being a resource for parents. I spend my time to display Ramsey County resource information on a bulletin board. I invest in a resource library so I can offer parents information about child development, sleep issues, food allergies, and child-friendly divorces. And there are times when I choose not to charge a family the difference between CCAP payments and my rates because these parents' wages have remained flat for decades. Some might say that doesn't make business sense. But for me, this is keeping my business model aligned with my values. And I know that is the right thing to do. As a smart businesswoman, I want an opportunity to add child care providers together to my toolbox because the list of high caliber child care resource organizations have shrunk due to budget cuts. As soon as we begin to rely on their support, funds disappear. I used to be an active member of the Wilder Foundation's Family Child Care Advisory Board, but that program was cut in 1993. Just last week, the nonprofit Child Care Works closed its doors as well. Currently, family child care providers have associations advocating for us. However, to no avail, the reimbursement rates have stayed stagnant for 10 years. We are losing ground. The current system is not working for us or parents, and we are tired of our voices hitting a wall. Providers are uniting to ask that you give us a chance to take financial control of our industry's disappearing resources and to add the power of negotiation. Providers are uniting to advocate for quality care parents can afford. Now, there are those who say that union dues will be passed on to parents, but please understand that I spend thousands of dollars per year on food. I spend thousands of dollars per year on curriculum, crafts, and activities. Choosing to spend a few hundred dollars a year on union dues actually makes business sense for me because I can help cement my resources to uplift this profession. And then, because of that, I can concentrate on children and do the job I love. At the very least, as white-collar professionals, please vote to empower our pink-collar profession. You have many opportunities to vote your values. And please, allow family child care providers the opportunity to vote for ours. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. And the remaining testifier, if you could please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Arthur Miller, and I'm a father. I'm actually Zach's dad. Thanks for allowing the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate File 778. Zach is 4 years old, and he's the love of my life. Every day I drop him off at my provider before I start my day. My provider, Jody, is a nurturing individual and someone who I have complete trust in. I mean, after all, she almost spends more time with him than I do. Her home is welcoming and safe environment, and it makes it much easier to leave Zach with her. I know she has the necessary training to keep Zach safe, and she understands the rules and regulations to ensure she's operating within the laws governing her business, and she's giving him the learning environment that's right for him and right for us. When I can trust her, and I know she's doing the best she can, I can focus my time on doing my job the best that I can. Basically, if she's not there, I can't go to work. If I can't go to work, I can't provide for my family and pay my bills. So her well-being is indeed my well-being, which is indeed my son's well-being, Zach. And I know when workers have the opportunity to come together with a common voice, so much more can be accomplished in the best interest of providers, which is in the best interest of parents, which is in the best interest of kids. Which is exactly why I support the rights of family child care providers to collectively bargain with the state for Zach. Being in a union means recognizing the voice that workers have together and honoring that recognition to lift the profession, which I know is sorely needed. In other states, organized child care providers have seen increased reimbursement rates, better training, and even health care negotiations. And knowing there's a collective voice means providers don't have to worry as much about the costs of running a business. And they can not only better care for our children, they can invest in safer and better homes, and they can even pass those savings on to me. Child care is a massive cost to parents, as we know. I pay almost $7,000 a year. So anything can be done to bring my cost down is huge. And that ultimately gives parents more choices. I want the best quality at the most affordable price in the setting that is most appropriate for Zach. Because ultimately, that's what this is all about. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I have one other testifier listed, Jennifer Munt. Is she also going to testify or not?
Ms. Munt is our public policy director, and she'll be available with me to answer questions at a time that's appropriate for you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, testifiers. And now I don't know if I said this in the beginning, but we do have equal time allocated to those in support of the bill and then equal time allocated to those who are against the bill. And so now we will move to the next section of our testifiers, and that is our testifiers who are not in support of the bill. We have 15 testifiers listed, and so I'd like to have them come up in groups of three. First, I'd like to have Jackie Harrington, Kelly Heaton, and Julie Seidel, and I may be saying that incorrectly. If you please come to the table. And we've allocated 40 minutes of time, and so we're allocating about 2 minutes per speaker. So if Ms. Harrington, if you could please introduce yourself for the...
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jackie Harrington, and I'm a licensed family child care provider from Rochester, and I've been providing care there for 14 years. I am here today as a board member of Family Child Care Incorporated, Olmsted County's Child Care Association, who is celebrating 40 years as an association of licensed family child care providers committed to developing and promoting high quality care in our community through education, resources, and support. FCCI does not support this bill and urges you to do the same. FCCI is also here today because our association was not intimidated when told inaccurately by organizers we must be neutral, silent, or take no position on this issue, or our nonprofit status would be jeopardized. And after personally receiving threatening anonymous letters during my term as president, it does not surprise me that other local associations are not here today. Based on feedback from our membership FCCI developed and approved the following non-support position statement, which was adopted September 2006. We do not support the organization of family child care providers by any union for the purpose of bargaining or negotiating on behalf of child care providers. FCCI recognizes that licensed family child care providers are independent, small business owners who have the right to manage their business. Over the course of the union's 8-year organizational effort, FCCI has revisited this issue and its position statement has been reaffirmed. FCCI supports and advocates locally and statewide for our membership, bringing legislative issues to members, hosting candidate conversations, and meeting with local licensing staff, and also attending DHS stakeholder meetings. I've included a brochure in the materials received for you to learn more about FCCI, Family Child Care Incorporated, and the supports that this association offers, which are similar supports offered through other local associations as designed by the memberships in those areas. FCCI recognizes and supports the unique individual business owners, not employees and not workers, that comprise the field of licensed family child care providers. Family child care providers who are asking you to oppose this bill and recognize them as such. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Heaton?
Hi, my name is Kelly Heaton. Madam Chair, members of the Senate Committee, thank you for letting me speak today. I'm a licensed child care provider in Ham Lake. I've been licensed for 10 years and have a C3 license. I provide care for 14 children and employ 2 part-time assistant teachers. I have a bachelor's degree in early childhood. My daycare is a successful small business where I am the owner, the boss, and the teacher. I set my own rates, my hours, and the business environment. I came here today to voice my opposition to Senate File 778. I do not need the union to lobby for me. I'm here today for myself and other providers who can't come to the Capitol at this inconvenient time or because they're caring for children. I have to follow all state laws, federal regulations, county licensing rules. I work hard to update myself on the latest studies and child development theories. I'm currently working to earn the 4 stars in the Repair and Wear program started this year. I believe all children should have access to high-quality care. If this passes, all progress, I feel, will be lost for building quality program, because there are plenty of opportunities out there for training for low-income families or low-income providers. Many providers like me may decide to not accept children with CCAP funds, or they'll decide to quit the business. This will lead to less choice, lower quality, and even higher prices. The unionization of daycares will not improve the quality of care or lower the high cost of daycare. The parent aware and building quality programs are helping low-income providers to improve standards. There even are more opportunities out there to provide for providing care if you provide care for family with CCAP funds. There's more training opportunities. Many of us came before you last year and at all had stated that we did not want this. We have other organizations through our county that help us organize and train. These organizations are funded by us if we choose to be a member. The unions will take these funds from us, no matter if we join or not, with the fair share fees. I would have to raise my rates for the higher cost of running my business. All the added costs will be passed on to the parents. Why would any provider want to accept a low-income family and have the union take their fair share? This scheme is to pull more taxpayers' money into the union and away from people who need it the most. They're targeting providers who accept children with CCAP funds, families who are disadvantaged, and receive these funds for daycare. The unions want to lobby for more CCAP fund funding, which is not directly for providers. This is for the families. This bill does nothing for the children. It hurts children by funneling more money away from them, from their teachers, to the unions. I'm not an employee of the state. I'm a small business owner. Please vote against this bill. I don't want to have another group telling me how to run my business.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Seidel, and I apologize if I'm not saying your name correctly. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Julie Seidel, and I have been a small business owner as a licensed family child care provider in Anoka County for 10 years now. Historically, labor unions center on collective bargaining over wages, benefits, and working conditions for their membership and on representing their members if management attempts to violate contract provisions. Being a small business owner, I set my own rates, I choose my own benefits, set my own hours, and write my own contracts. I feel that proposed law changes are unfair or unclear, I have my own voice and can use that opinion to talk to my senators and my representatives to help make those changes. These are all advantages to owning your own business. So what advantages would I have being part of this union? There are none, period. By becoming a part of a union, they will not be bargaining for my wages. I do not have unsafe working conditions in my home. I write my own contracts, which include vacation and holiday pay. As far as benefits go, I purchase my own individual health insurance, which suits my needs. I have an IRA that I contribute to for my retirement, all while maintaining a sustainable level of clientele. These are all benefits of being self-employed. The union is asking for the exclusive right to represent us in negotiations with the state regarding issues such as quality standards, quality rating system, availability of training opportunities and funding, reimbursement rates, access to benefits, licensing actions, monitoring and evaluation of family child care providers, and any other matters that would improve recruitment or retention. I am currently enrolled in the new Parent Aware rating system, which is in place for licensed child care providers. This is helping set our new standards. There are several ways to obtain quality education already in place. You can go through Think Small, CCRNR, your local daycare association, and online classes through MNCPD. The wide variety of classes offered range from health, safety and nutrition, growth and child development, learning environment, curriculum, assessment and planning for individual needs, families and communities, interactions with children, plus college credit courses and courses in other language than English. There are also opportunities and funding currently available. I have already received a grant this year from CCRNR and have applied for another grant through Think Small. Funding is available if you do your research. Just like any small business, you need to research opportunities to better your business. Monitoring and evaluation of family child care providers, licensing and licensing actions are currently controlled through DHS and our local county licensors, and they are closely working with providers on improvements and clarifications on this as well. The recruitment and retention of quality family child care providers is already being addressed by the new Parent Aware rating system and changes being requested by DHS, which include additional training requirements for new and current providers. The system as it stands now works extremely well, and by forcing family child care providers to join a union will only increase costs for the providers, which in turn will be passed on to the families in their care or in reduced services the provider can provide to their children. By forcing the 11,000-plus family daycare providers to unionize, you're not only affecting the providers, but approximately 170,000 parents that use licensed family child care providers in our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And now I'd like to ask three more testifiers to come to the table. Jennifer Parrish, Cindy Cunningham, and Holly Saville. Thank you. And Ms. Parrish, please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Parrish, and I'm a licensed family child care provider in Rochester. It's imperative that each and every one of you understands before moving forward how little support this union has from the licensed family child care profession. I brought a few numbers to share with you to illustrate this. A 2012 independent study done by Wilder Research in Minnesota showed that while over 40% of providers are members of a professional child care association in Minnesota, only 3% identified themselves as being a member of a union. While our associations have over 4,000 members, a recent AFSCME newsletter states that this child care union, after being here for 8 years, has only 57 dues-paying members. There is not support for this amongst the licensed family child care profession. This brings me to my next concern, the creation of a unit combining licensed and unlicensed providers. The only thing that these two groups have in common is that some care for children receiving child care assistance. Unlicensed providers are not running a business. Oftentimes, they are a family member or a friend helping out temporarily until the parent can make other arrangements. I, on the other hand, have lesson plans, a preschool curriculum, professional contracts and policies. This year alone, I will have taken close to 50 hours of professional development training. I cannot begin to convey how upsetting it is knowing that the business I have built over the last 8 years could be spoken for by a bargaining unit comprised predominantly of unlicensed providers, most of whom, because of their temporary nature, will not be doing this in another year or two. These unlicensed providers outnumber us by the thousands. Sorry. Okay. Including them is the only way for a union to win an election. Even if every eligible licensed family child care provider voted no, the unlicensed providers could still force unionization upon us. We have been actively opposing unionization for 8 years now, and it has proved to be a costly battle. My child care rates have already gone up as a result of this, and my rates will go up even more if this passes. We are not going away. This bill eliminates the voice of over half the licensed providers in the state, and if this becomes law, we will work continuously until it's repealed, like child care unions in other states have been repealed. Please respect our decision to remain union-free and vote no on this bill. And I'd also like to clarify that this bill does not simply give providers an opportunity to work together. We already have that, and we've been doing that successfully through our associations for decades. This bill simply gives the union an avenue to collect dues and fees from unwilling child care providers. And if you as legislators feel that CCAP funds need to be increased, you're the ones that hold the power to do that. And we don't need to funnel hundreds of dollars a month through child care assistance payments per provider in order for you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Parrish. Ms. Cunningham?
This is a difficult one to figure out what to say that hasn't already been said, so I might jump around a little bit. I'm Cindy Cunningham. I live here in St. Paul in Ramsey County. I've been a licensed provider for 15 years. I'm a single parent, a single earner, and I own my own business. This is my life and my livelihood. I've been part of a coalition of providers, childcareunioninfo.com, for over 2 years, which has attempted to research issues, educate providers and the public on this union issue of unionization. I support unions in the workplace and respect their strong voice regarding workers' rights. My respect and support for unions is part of why I do not want a union for providers. As these union organizers have stated, this isn't your father's union. It is a new breed of unionization. Please do not jump on the bandwagon and change legislation. If this is to be considered, please understand the industry you are considering granting this option to. As written, the bill shows that there is not a clear understanding of either our industry or of CCAP. While the bargaining unit is defined, which would be receiving exclusive bargaining rights, including negotiations with DHS regarding licensing standards, the individuals in this bargaining unit is fluid and confused. The bill combines unlicensed with licensed and appears to misunderstand how child care subsidy program works. As a licensed child care provider, I'm a successful female small business owner, not a worker. I am sorry that some individuals do not see themselves that way. If granted, the unions will have complete bargaining unit, bargaining power, unlicensed and licensed. The part of the bill which says, and who provides child care assistance services under Chapter 119B is inaccurate. It is what is being created. We do not provide services, we provide child care to families who are either private pay or utilize public subsidy payments. CCAP is a public welfare program, not mine as a provider, to have the power to change. Families apply for and receive the benefit. If there is a negotiation where wages are increased and set at a rate, the budgets within our government stay static or go down, the number of families who can qualify to and the money available to actually receive the benefit will decrease. If the amount is set, the legislators will no longer be able to adjust the rate so that more families can increase. Families need to have CCAP changed. It needs to be addressed. My industry, my business, does not need to be the change agent in child care subsidy. If providers choose not to change, charge the difference in the rate, that is a business decision, not for the government to change for them. So let me tell you a little bit about this group. In Ramsey County, AFSCME Chapter 5 CCPT leadership is where we all live together. The only protection I and many other providers feel we need is protection from the union members themselves and organizers. We have a mini example in Ramsey County where the Ramsey County Commissioners have partnered with CCPT. This group of CCPT liaisons has now become the charter leaders for CCPT AFSCME Union. They are the individuals who spoke to you in support just a few minutes ago. The union members and organizers have attempted to silence our county associations, including the two individuals who you just heard from in support. Excuse me if this is personal. There have been emails and comments to shut down our Ramsey County Association and the board members because they are not supposed to be speaking to this, and that has been in just recent days. Neutral is not silent. Our county association should have the right to support and to provide information. They are being told that they cannot do that. Once this union is done, I assume that will continue at an even stronger rate. Our county association membership is only $30 a year, from which I can receive all of the training that I need for my licensing. The two providers who also spoke in support of the union are paid by either the CCPT Ramsey County or by AFSCME between $3,000 and $20,000 a year, and that has been for the last 3 years. I do not see them as straight child care providers. They do receive already funding for organizing. The card signing, I will say that if there is a vote put forward, there is no way that this can be fair. We've all been lied to. It's been deceptive. We have numerous accounts. People say, how can we possibly not know what we're signing? The union organizers come to our homes during the middle of the day, walk in our doors. We get our businesses by people walking in our doors. We're used to having licensors, city officials, and many other people walking in our doors. To get rid of them, people have signed because the union membership have been done. How can this possibly become a fair vote when all we have been done is lied to? I was at Sandy Pappas's town hall meeting Sunday. There were statements made that I do not find in wording. Limit the cost of monthly fees to $25 is not in this bill. Prevent union from taking a percentage off CCAP payment. It has happened in other states to the tune of millions prior before getting to providers. A limit to this card signed within the previous 6 months is not in this bill. And it was stated that there's been a decrease of the number of child care providers of 39% due to child care subsidy. That is inaccurate. Only approximately a third of licensed providers in the state of Minnesota have families with subsidy. And they come and go out of our doors, and it is totally out of my control if I have a family on subsidy or not. As far as my personal voice with licensing, currently there are two bills going through, one through the House and one through the Senate, that I personally have included amendments on through legislators, that is going to redo the wording on safe sleep environment. There's also a bill that I've been working with on DHS with Jerry Kerber that will change a variance that we've all struggled with into a law. We have a voice. We can exercise it, and I personally have done so and appreciate being able to work with our legislators. If exclusive bargaining right goes through, they will be doing the bargaining. The licensing comes to you. My voice will be dramatically changed about what I can say and do regarding the licensing of my business.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Great. And Ms. Saville?
Hi, my name is Holly Saville, and I'm a licensed family child care provider in St. Michael. I've been doing that for the past 8 years. I've been working with children my whole life. I've been a center director. I've worked with special needs children in preschools. I've done private therapy for children with special needs. I've been everywhere. I'm also president of the Wright County Family Child Care Association, and you should have a letter we wrote to you in your packets of written testimony. I'm also a trainer for early childhood professionals. I'm a mentor and consultant, so I wear many hats. I'm here to urge you to vote against Senate File 778 and the forced unionization of family child care providers. I'm also disappointed that these two bills are grouped together because they are two completely separate issues. And it's disappointing that we didn't have this ahead of time to read through it. But the unionization of PCAs is a completely separate issue from licensed family child care providers, and I think that the merits or detriments of each bill should be decided on their own. Licensed family child care providers have fought against this issue for the past 8 years, especially over the past 2 years, and they've overwhelmingly showed that they are against family child care unionization. I don't understand why some legislators in AFSCME are still not listening to us. We support people's rights to join a union, but providers already have the right to join the union right now. As we mentioned, only 57 providers think it's important to join the union. Especially when we're talking about the fact that we are independent, self-employed, small business owners. I don't see how that makes us any different from independent construction workers, from grocers who take accept food stamps, from chiropractors or dentists who take Minnesota Care or Medicaid or whatever the term is for it. How are they any different from us, and what's to stop this from setting a very dangerous precedent for them? We've done so many wonderful things without a union. I've only been providing licensed care for only 8 years, but I know many providers who've been doing it for 20-plus years, and they've done wonderful without a union. Some legislators and union representatives have implied that we need a union to provide high-quality care or to do our jobs well. I find that incredibly insulting, and I'm certainly not sitting around waiting to do my job well or to provide high-quality care until I'm unionized. I care for children, and I provide a high-quality curriculum based on Reggio, Montessori, and creative curriculum. A union didn't teach me that. In fact, I didn't even take education classes to teach me that. I did research on my own to decide, and from my experience. I'm also working on my master's in early childhood. That's giving my children a better quality care. I didn't need a union to do that either. I didn't need a union to pay the $16,000 of tuition I will end up paying for that. It's just absolutely preposterous that we could be even considered for a union. We're certainly not employees of the state of Minnesota, although this bill does say that for the purposes of this bill, we would be considered, CCAP providers would be considered employees of the state. And those CCAP payments are not paychecks, they are payments, reimbursement checks. Federal labor laws explicitly prohibit employers, independent contractors, and domestic workers from being unionized. You can group us into any one of those categories, and it's still the same. I've also brought a copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Maybe some people need a refresher on it, because this bill violates our 14th Amendment rights to equal protection. I'm a history major. It comes in handy. It creates a law that would abridge the privileges of citizens of the United States by allowing a minority to decide for the majority. In fact, it's a gross minority. According to this new bill, it'd only be 10% of all providers who would decide for the majority, and that's wholly unfair. It treats licensed family child care providers who do not receive CCAP funds differently than those who do. So there's many reasons why this goes against the 14th Amendment. The things the union wants to negotiate with the state will affect all providers, not just union members, not the providers who receive CCAP funds. Also, including unlicensed providers in this is absolutely a slap in the face, quite honestly. And they don't follow licensing rules by any means. They're not required to. So I fail to see why a union would be coming to the table to supposedly influence licensing rules, regulations, training requirements, et cetera, and be speaking for people who aren't affected by that at all. So besides the fact that it's only 10% deciding for us, only 50% of those 50% of providers would need to sign cards. 50% is not a majority. The bill does not say more than 50%. It says 50% would mean that they wouldn't even have to conduct a vote. Besides all the constitutional violations of this bill, there's myriad problems with it. I know people have mentioned the fact that we already have many organizations working to support us, that we don't need a union to do that. Membership is voluntary. The Wright County Family Child Care Association is only $35 per year. We have free trainings. We have a wonderful conference each year. We have resources. We have referral services. All those things provided to providers for only $35 per year. And I don't understand why these child care associations that exist, the state and local ones, why they're not allowed to be exclusive representatives, but the unions could be. It seems grossly unfair.
Thank you. Can you wrap up your testimony?
Sure, no
please,
problem. AFSCME also represents some of our licensors and social workers, and I think that's a huge conflict of interest to have them be on both sides of the table, supposedly representing our grievances against them and representing theirs. I urge you to vote against this, and do the right thing and listen to your constituents, listen to the people of Minnesota. 90% of Minnesotans are against this licensed family child care unionization, and the majority of providers are also against it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all the testifiers at the table. I'd like to ask Becky Swanson, Trish Berger, and Joan Finley if you could please come to the table. Ms. Swanson, please proceed and introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and fellow senators. I apologize. I am suffering from laryngitis. I have been sick with a sinus infection over the past week, so please bear with me. I am a child care provider, and I have been a child care provider for the past 26 years in Dakota County, Lakeville, Minnesota. I love what I do, but I come to you today with a very heavy heart. Because as you already have heard today, that there are only 57 providers who have joined in with the union, and yet there are 4,500 providers who have not. Today, I come to you because I decided to find out for myself. I decided to pick one district and call the providers in that particular district to see how that district feels about being unionized. I called district number 65, Senator Pappas's district. I have only been able to receive the confirmation for three child care providers who are licensed in Senator Pappas's district who would like to be unionized. How are we still sitting here today talking about a topic of being union? We are independent business owners. We set our own prices. We set our own working conditions. This isn't even on the radar as something that is even popular within our business. Yes, some of us take CCAP children. The CCAP funds are for the family. They are the ones who fill out the paperwork. They are the ones who qualify from the state of Minnesota to be qualified for CCAP funds. As a child care provider, I fill out paperwork so that the state has continuity to say, yes, I am a licensed child care provider. The family comes to me. They have a right to choose me as their provider or not. If they choose me as a provider, I fill out paperwork. I take care of their child, submit the paperwork to the state, and am reimbursed within a two-week period. If the family decides not to stay with me, they move to a different provider or maybe to an unlicensed provider. There again, it is up to the state to agree whether or not this provider is qualified according to the guidelines of CCAP to take care of their child. The money belongs and stays with the child and the family who qualify. All of us in child care, we work extremely hard. Our business replies and relies on the reputation we build in the community in which we work. The union does not build my reputation. The union will not bring in my clientele. That is still based on me. Whether or not I offer a good quality program is really based on you. Because you are the ones who work with the state to form the rules and the guidelines in which I have to comply. And those rules and guidelines are enforced by my licensor. If I do not comply to the rules and guidelines that are set by this state, I am not qualified to be a licensor. And my license can be revoked. CCAP money depends on you. If you want to increase the amount of CCAP money that these families receive, it is up to you. I have a voice here because I am an independent businesswoman. Child care providers are, for the majority, independent business women. I'm asking every one of you to go back to your districts and have a meeting with the child care providers in your personal district and find out from them how they stand. Do they want to be unionized? If you can only find three and the majority of the rest do not care to be unionized, do you think you should be moving forward with this bill? I spent my day Saturday at a child care training conference. The conference was led by Dakota County child care providers. They volunteer their time and efforts to belong to the association to set up this conference. While at the conference, I was approached by a provider. She came up to me and she gave me the biggest hug, and she was almost crying. She says, "I pray every single day that the legislators understand that we are small business, that we are child care providers. We do not work for the state of Minnesota. We do not work for the union. And if the union is put in place, we still do not work for the state of Minnesota or for the union. But all this bill does is take away our rights." Holly spoke earlier about our constitutional rights. Maybe some of us do need a lesson in reading the Constitution over again. Maybe some of us do need to go back out to our constituents who voted for us to put us in office and find out how they stand. I'm asking you to meet with child care providers in your personal districts and ask the question, do you want me to move forward for unionization of a profession that are small business owners? I pray for you. I hope you see clear guidance in what you do. I understand that when I elect an official, they are to work for me, not for special interest groups. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson. And I just want to state we have 8 more testifiers, and we'd like to really make sure that all of them are heard. And if you could please keep your testimony to 2 minutes or less. Thank you. Ms. Berger.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Trish Berger, and I am an educated C2 licensed provider from Esco, Minnesota. I have struggled to build my own business as a sole proprietor. I have met all of the required trainings, and I have met many challenges through the birth of my own business. I am proud to say that I own my own business. I have worked very hard to build respect with my parents and my children. I'm against forming a union. There's just no stability and consistency throughout the counties in our state. The licensors are just not trained to believe and enforce the same rules. And I do not understand the concept of making us fight you in order to have consistency throughout the licensing experience by forming a union. We're small business owners. We set our own prices. We do all of that for ourselves. If it is representation that you seek for the providers, then please listen to our associations. We already have a voice through them. We need our base and our history to provide experiences and knowledge. This bill does not allow us to strike. It does not give us an experienced voice, and it makes us fight you. If you didn't know, our profession is full of giggles, laughter, ups and downs, along with the stresses of separation anxiety and early growth and development. Most of us walk around with baby spit up and peanut butter handprints on our backs, and truthfully and honestly, those are the best hugs ever. We are peaceful and we are respectful. We teach respect. We care about the whole child, and we put our students first. Please show us that same respect by not forcing our sole proprietor businesses to pay for a union that cannot voice the diversity that runs amongst us. We have casual child cares. We have organic child cares, Christian child cares that offer preschooling. And then you throw us in with the unlicensed babysitter. It's just an insult to our profession. We don't need a union to represent us when you already have that power to make DHS have more consistent rules. You put the funding into DHS to build it up with consistency. We don't need exclusive representation. We want to keep our own voice and choose who we want to represent us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Finley.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joan Finley, and I'm a licensed family child care provider from Dakota County, Apple Valley, and I've been doing it for 15 years. I just became nationally accredited and 4-star parent aware, and I have over 124 hours of training within the last year and most of those trainings I received free. I provide care 24 hours a day. While I have not had a family on assistance for 1 year, I am registered to accept subsidy payments from the state on behalf of low-income families. I am here to testify against Senate File 778. Child care businesses like mine are so important to families who use the CCAP program because many of them work non-traditional hours, and there is a shortage of quality programs that are willing to operate evenings and weekends, which I do. As much as it breaks my heart, I would no longer be able to accept these families. If this bill passes, since hundreds of dollars in fair share fees would be deducted out of these payments and given to a union that I do not want or need. I've run my business for 15 years. I'm single, I've built it up, and I'm an independent owner. I was very disturbed to learn that over half the licensed providers, myself included, will not be allowed to vote. It appears the majority of providers eligible to vote are the unlicensed providers. Not only will they have the majority voice and a vote, that they will also be the majority voice during negotiations when issues like licensing and training are discussed. These are issues that do not even affect them, so I don't understand that at all. Allowing unlicensed providers to determine what direction my profession takes will not raise the quality of care. Supporters of this bill have stated that unionization will not raise the cost of child care. I wanted to be here today to make sure every one of you understands that if this passes, it will negatively affect my business, and I will raise my rates. My parents are already aware of this. The cost of child care will go up as a direct result of this bill, and parents need to understand this and prepare for this. Ultimately, they are the ones who will suffer. I am asking you to stand with licensed family child care providers and vote no on SS8. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you to all of the testifiers at the table. And now I'd like to ask Joyce Block, Grant Johnson, and Jane Thiessen, if you would please come to the table. And Ms. Block, please address the committee and introduce yourself first.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Joyce Block, and I'm a licensed daycare provider. And unlike everybody else here, I just came on a whim. I have been doing daycare for over 25 years. And I decided to call in last week and just say that I'm against the union. And then I got a call yesterday afternoon to see if I would like to testify. Well, I worked all day today, and I decided to shut my business down early and make a drive down here because I frankly couldn't believe that it was still going on, that they're trying to push a union through. It seems like an attack on the women that run the daycare businesses. It's mainly run by women, not to say that there isn't men, but it seems very discriminatory against us. It's very insulting against our intelligence. Many of us run a very successful business already. I raised 4 kids on my own. I put them all through college. We know what we're doing. I put myself through college. We are offered classes that fit all of our needs. If we need help with a contract, if we need help with running our business or setting up certain games or whatever we're doing, we have all the help we need from our licensor, from the people that are in our community, daycare providers, and I'm just talking from my heart. I don't have a speech made for any of this. We've done it gracefully for 25 years. I don't know what the secret agenda is behind putting a union through to us. We are all there for each other. As I've gone to classes to keep my licensing up, I've heard providers saying that they're not going to get licensed anymore, that they're going to quit, that they're just not going to go through the rigmarole anymore because they just feel attacked because we're very successful. We know what we're doing. I don't need help running my business part. If I need help, I would go get it. But we're all doing quite well. The majority of us are. The ones that need help, the experienced providers are there to help them if they would need our help or the licensing that's already in place. As far as health insurance goes, I have health insurance. I've always had it for myself and my kids. There's a global market out there now. There's the internet. There's all sorts of things that are available for us. We are able to find all of these things on our own. We don't need, you know, a union to come in to help us find that. It doesn't serve us any purpose whatsoever. I love doing what I do. I've done it my whole life. As I was taking child care classes, I went on to get, I have my 4-year elementary ed degree from Augsburg College, and I went on to St. Kate's to get my master's in curriculum and instruction so I could run a preschool program as well. We all can think outside the box. We're taught to because we run our own business. We're very intelligent. We know what we're doing. We know how to run and work with little kids. You know, a lot of my kids have grown up now and are very successful adults. The things that I did jot down were, I'm just nervous. You know, we're our own business. We're our own small private business. I don't see anybody out there trying to unionize the lawn care people or the snowplow people or like all these other women so eloquently put and with their speeches have so eloquently put before you. We do just fine on our own, and our main business is to run with the kids. The business side of it, we do outside of our hours. I just wanted to speak my voice. There's many of us that don't want to be part of a union. I'd say most of us don't. I don't know anybody that wants to be in the union in the town that I work in. No one. And of all the classes I've gone to, behind the scenes talking, they're all afraid to speak up or they can't come here. I had to shut down, like I said, and inconvenience all of my family so I could get down here and speak my voice, because no one can really be here at 3 if you're running a successful business. We're there for our families. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Johnson, please introduce yourself.
I am Grant Johnson from Edina, and Madam Chair and the committee, thank you for hearing me. I'm here on behalf of my wife, who is doing daycare right now. It was either me take over her daycare, as I am her backup, or me come down here and testify, and she asked me to come down to testify. Susan is a competent, professional, trained small business owner. She has been providing licensed child care for 24 years. And she's very concerned that if there is a vote, all providers should have the opportunity to vote, not only the CCAP providers, because we believe that the current bill does not make it clear that fair share dues will not be collected from all providers. She's also concerned that several years ago, someone from a union showed up at a busy time in our daycare to talk with her about unionization. She believes that she may have signed a card to get more information about health care plans. That was the guise under which they asked her to sign up. She wants to know how it will be verified that the cards are current and whether providers will have the opportunity to check to see if their names are on the lists that will be used as the card check part of this. I ask you to vote against this bill on her behalf and on mine. I don't believe that the unionization of child care providers helps children. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And Ms. Thiessen, I'm guessing, but I may have that wrong.
It's Thiessen, but it's okay. Well, a lot has been said today. I guess I'm one of the last ones. The only thing I've been, Madam Chair and members of the Senate State and Local Government Committee, thanks for listening to me today. I am a licensed family child care provider of 23 years in the city of Otsego, Minnesota. I am opposed to SF 778, and I urge you to do the same. The only thing I can say is I've been running a daycare for 23 years. I've done it very successfully. Nobody's ever helped me. I've done a lot of research. I've done a lot of the background. I run, a very good program. After 23 years, I have seen a lot of my daycare growing up now. They're graduating. They're in college, which is hard to see. But I get a lot of feedback from them saying, you've done a good job, you're doing well in your business, we really appreciate you. And now we have this. I get trainings from the county. If I need any help, I have so many outlets to go to. I don't need a union. I have talked to many, many people. I know a lot of people. There has not been one person in the last 8 years that I have talked to about this that has said, yes, I think you need a union. I don't know where this is all coming from. I think it's an infringement of my freedoms. I think that if this is supposed to go to a vote, I think I should have my vote. I have been doing this for 23 years. It is my business. I think letting unlicensed providers have a vote is very unfair. This is America. I think we should run things the way we have in many, many years. We should all have a vote. If this is going to be to a vote, then I should have a say in it. And I am a single mom. I am a sole earner in my household. I need to have a say in something like this that greatly affects my business. And I ask you to reconsider your efforts and turn this down, and so I can focus on what I'm here for. I went into daycare 23 years ago so I could have my own business. I love taking care of children. I love to teach them. I enjoy being with them. This is taking up too much of my time. It consumes me because I'm concerned. There's a lot of providers that don't want to come out and say what they have to say, but they all agree. We do not want this. I did not want to have to come down here today, but I felt like I had to. I am not a good speaker, as you can see, but I felt it was my duty and to help other people in my profession to help them have a say. It's just ridiculous. I can't understand this. So please reconsider this. We have done this for a long time without any union. I think we can go on for a long, long, more many years without any help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all of you for your testimony. And now with the remaining three testifiers, Dana Smith, Cindy Bills, and Judy Sanda, would you please come to the table?
Ask for the page.
Ms. Smith, would you begin, please,
Madam
and
Chair.
Introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Dana Smith. I'm here representing Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, MLFCCA, another acronym for you. Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, affiliate to National Association for Family Child Care, MLFCCA, opposes Senate File 778, but will support the outcome of a full licensed provider vote. I passed out some folders that will have what I'm reading here. I'm not going to read through all of it for the time restraint, but I will point to the numbers that I'm speaking about inside. The first section that I'd like to talk about is the definition or a redefining of the definition of family child care provider. With reading the actual bill, the proposed bill creates a new definition of family child care as legally licensed or legally unlicensed child care services to families utilizing child care assistance, basically. This section would exclude over half of the providers from voting, many of whom are willing and registered to accept CCAP child care assistant payments from the state. A fair union election allows all licensed child care providers to vote, regardless of whether or not they accept or have accepted child care assistance payments. Second section, licensed providers and unlicensed providers do not have the same state regulations. Therefore, licensed and unlicensed providers should be separate from a vote to unionize and have separate unions if that is the case. In the bill, it discusses meet and negotiate, and that's what she's pertaining to here. Katie Chase is our director. I'm reading her statement here. With the exception of the Child Care Assistance Program, the issue listed above are licensed child care issues, allowing unlicensed providers to vote for an organization that will affect regulations for licensed providers is not an equitable representation. In Michigan and Illinois, the number of unlicensed providers eligible to vote was 3 to 5 times higher than the licensed providers. Even if every licensed provider voted no, the unlicensed vote could have determined unionization for all licensed providers. MLFCCA asks that all licensed providers be given the opportunity to be heard. Child care licensors are unionized by AFSCME. How can a union represent both sides of the arbitration table? Furthermore, a union is not qualified to determine quality standards for children and professional development needs of providers. Organizations that have years of experience in these areas need to maintain the right to be at the table.
Number three, providers should have the right to join any organization representing them. That organization should have a seat at the table for negotiation issues impacting licensed providers. This is pertaining to the exclusive representation section. Number four, the certification process section, subdivision four. This certification process negates a secret ballot election if the union is able to collect over 50% of the cards. Some of the cards were obtained 7 years ago. MLFCCA has maintained written record submitted to Governor Dayton of numerous providers' complaints about the card-collecting campaign and deceptive practices used to gain a signature. Additionally, some of the providers who signed cards in the past are no longer providing child care. If cards are used in the certification bill language, should include that any card over 6 months old should not be used in this process. A secret ballot election of all licensed child care providers would give every provider the opportunity to vote. While the union states that membership in the union is voluntary, if there is a family child care provider's union, representation would not be voluntary. For this reason, all licensed providers should have the opportunity to vote. MLFCCA will support the outcome of a true majority vote. It is imperative that licensed providers are heard on this issue. Holding committee meetings in the evenings or during the weekends, allowing providers to attend, is vital. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And Cindy Bills.
Hi there. Thank you, Madam Chair and state and local government Senate members. I will make this brief. I will reduce it from a 20-page paper down to a few notes.
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, yes, I will do that. Thank you. My name is Cindy Bills, and I have been a licensed provider in Rosemont, Minnesota for the last 9 years. Prior to that, I was a preschool teacher, and I ran and supervised all of the youth and family programs at the YMCA and the Drop-In Child Care Center. I have... I'm not even going to go over all of these specific issues of this bill. I believe they've been covered by many of my colleagues or some of the unjust processes involved. Instead, I just want to share with you what I believe this bill will take away from our profession because the exclusivity forced upon us with this. As small business owners and someone who's really passionate about early education for children and providing care for these families, these very busy families in our state, we already have the resources to assist and help foster our professional development. Our Dakota County Child Care Association, our Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association. What's important about these, I won't go into all the specifics because I believe they've been covered. It is about relationship. It is about involvement and volunteering and being a part of it. It helps us foster and mentor new providers. We learn from each other. We are part of a professional community that is really, really important in this profession that is so time-consuming. We give so much care and so much love to these families. We are all very, very impassioned about our businesses. We also have our county. We work very closely with our county. Our county listens to our concerns. Our social workers assist us as we need it. We have our Parent Aware. We have all these programs. And we have the option to join a union if we so choose to. The exclusivity, though, of this union will take away my voice. The exclusivity of this is taking away my vote. This is what is very, very important to me. I currently do not have families who are on CCAP, but this could change. This could change next month, next week with this economy like it is. You know, I don't have a voice now, but if next month I have a family on CCAP, I still will not have a voice. It is very important that all licensed providers are heard. I am asking you to give us the right to continue to have a choice, whether we choose to join this union or not. I am asking you to listen to the providers and to your district, and I'm asking you to give all licensed providers a voice and a vote. I'm asking you to vote no on this Senate File 778. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Judy Sanda?
I just came from the great room because they told me I wasn't on the list.
Oh, sorry for that. Please state your name.
Madam Chair, my name is Judy Sanda. I'm a daycare provider from Cloquet, Minnesota. I've been doing daycare for 32 years, very happily. I do all of my own paperwork. I have a waiting list for clients. I do my own trainings. I have no problem. I have a wonderful, wonderful licensor. I have, everything is there. If I have a problem, I know how to dial the phone. And the problem can usually be solved doing that. I have never needed anybody to come in and tell me how to run my business. I am a sole proprietor, and that's what I intend to remain. I have 5 children in my daycare right now that are on CCAP. Now, I can handle that, but you guys pass this bill, and I will probably have to let 5 children go because I'm not going to do it. I've had thoughts about quitting. I've had thoughts about, I'll just do it unlicensed till you catch me. But I just really do not believe that there is anything that the union can do for me in my personal business. I've had the union be at my doors. I find them frightening, and I find them scary. I urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. And again, thank you to all the testifiers that we've listened to today. I really appreciate your coming here. Next, I'd like to move to time for questions and discussion. Senator Thompson, you had a question for one of the earlier testifiers. Would you like to pose that question now?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. Before I get to that, though, Ms. James, I'd like you to clarify something. If I understood Senator Pappas correctly at the beginning of the hearing, she said that this would not apply to any daycare or in-home health providers that are not getting government subsidies. Did I understand that correctly? And if so, where is the language? Because I don't have all the rules and things in front of me. I tried to figure it out from this Subdivision 3 here in Section 2, but I'm not sure. Or, pardon me, 4.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I think that there has been a lot of misunderstandings about the bill because I think that our legislative language is difficult to understand. And especially when it refers to, it's difficult for me. I mean, that's not an insulting thing. I think it is difficult for all of us to understand. Senator Thompson just said that he had trouble finding where this was. So, I mean, we are legislators, but we sometimes don't understand the language as well. So on page 1, line 117, in the definition of family child care provider, and that definition is only for purposes of this law. It doesn't mean that it's defined, it's often probably defined differently in other parts of the law. But for purposes of this law, it is someone either licensed or unlicensed who provides legal child care services and, on page 121, and who provides child care assistance services under Chapter 119B. And I certainly could have my advisors
Madam Chair,
if that's not correct.
Senator Thompson?
I'd asked if we could get counsel to just explain, because it's hard while I'm sitting here to get through all these different sections and how they apply and what they mean. I'm just wondering if we get some help from Ms. James.
Ms. James, do you have any additional information that could clarify this paragraph?
Madam Chair, members, on line, as Senator Pappas described on line 1.21, it's that under Chapter 119B that gets to the providers who receive a subsidy. And then also in the second article of the bill on page 6, lines 6.7-ish to 6.12 list a variety of chapters that provide are programs under which subsidies are provided.
Ms. James, what other number was it after page 1? What other line was it?
Madam Chair and members, on page 6, the definition of covered program that begins on line 6.3, and then also the definition of direct support services that begins on line 6.13, reference 256B. There are programs within those chapters, and those provide for subsidies.
Just to clarify, then, that applies to the home health care workers, correct, and not the child care workers. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and members, yes, that's correct.
Madam Chair, I'd like to just make a few comments in response to the testifiers and then invite the unions to also come up and respond to some of the concerns. It does appear to me that we have a major philosophical difference between independent business owners, and I certainly respect all of the work that you do. You provide wonderful services for our children and our state, and I think you all do a fabulous job. So the philosophical difference is, being as part of this kind of hybrid of an organizational effort, does that mean you still can't consider yourselves independent business owners? And I would say that many professionals belong to multiple organizations. Sometimes it's a professional organization, sometimes it's a Rotary Club, sometimes it's a Chamber of Commerce, and sometimes it's a union. And we've been finding that sometimes there are unions and things that aren't as customary. There were times, as stated earlier, where teachers weren't in unions. That was not considered appropriate. Where nurses weren't in unions. That was not considered appropriate. So it is new territory, and I respect that people can have philosophical differences. So if you are a licensed daycare provider and you don't take CCAP children, you don't have to be impacted whatsoever by this legislation. There's nothing in this legislation that says there's going to be less choice or lower quality or higher prices. There's no data to back that up at all. Second, there is a lack of understanding about the protocol for the election, and I may need some help with this in case I don't get it right. But my understanding is that, first of all, 500 people have to sign a card that says they're interested in moving toward an election, and that gives the union, who has collected the cards, and they have to be within the last 6 months. That means they can go to the Commissioner of Human Services or the Commissioner of Mediation Services and get the list of all the – let's just stay with daycare providers. Get the list of daycare providers. Then they have to find among that list at least 10% of those people who say they want to go to an election. They want to have an election to decide whether they want a union to represent them. And then the election would have to be a majority. It has to be a majority of those people participating in the election. This is the way it works for all other union elections. This is the way our democracy works. It's the majority of people voting in the election will decide if they want the union to represent them. So just like some people have felt that it's not fair that I don't get to vote, you could also argue it's not fair that you do get to vote if you don't take CCAP children. The fair share dues is the union that's already organized has already set the dues at $25 a month, so we're not talking about hundreds of dollars. The fair share dues is typically, and I can stand to be corrected, but it's typically 85% of that. And again, if you don't take CCAP children, then you also are not subject to CCAP to the fair share. The advantage, if you do take children to joining the union, is then you do get to vote. And I think that the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association can still represent you and can still represent people who don't take CCAP families or who take CCAP families. There's no reasons why you can't have multiple entities that represent you. Madam Chair, then I would be open to any other questions that the members might have, committee might have.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Are there additional questions? Senator Thompson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, do we have any way of knowing how many daycare providers that currently do CCAP might choose not to serve that client base if this is forced upon them?
I believe there are currently 9,000 that take CCAP dollars and CCAP families, and I do not know. There's not been a survey done, to my knowledge, that says if there is a union, will you decide not to take CCAP. There could be, if the union is able to negotiate a better rate for them, there could be more people who would like to take CCAP children then, because it would be a better rate that would help them with their stabilize their business.
Additional questions? Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and Representative Senator Pappas, where does that $25 bit, the fair share, where is that in the bill?
It's not in the bill, so someone needs to help me with that, Mr. Sein. I know that they have, the existing members of the union have already voted to set the dues at $25, but I don't know what the how the fair share rate is set.
Madam,
Mr. Sein.
Madam Chair and Senator, there's nothing in the bill because there is nothing in PELRA on that. The dues are set in our union by the membership. They've set the dues at $25 a month. They figure out what they want to do, how much it'll cost to do it, and set an amount. And they've set that amount at this. So it's really part of the union constitution, not a part of the law. And a fair share person would pay no more than up to 85%. It might be less than that, depending on a calculation that gets done called Hudson. It could be less, but would never be more than 85%. Madam Chair, I hope that answers the question for the Senator.
Ms. James, did you have additional information from statute?
Madam Chair, I would just note that in PELRA, Chapter 179A.06, 06, Subdivision 3 is where the fair share fee is. And so that's implicated by the language of the bill because it makes Chapter 179A applicable to both of these groups. And it is capped in statute at 85%.
Additional questions? Or did that answer your question, Senator Johnson?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just, Madam Chair, I was, I thought maybe it was in the bill somewhere, and I wanted to find it.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, first of all, an issue that isn't really related to the substance here, but I'm a little bit disappointed that we decided to combine these two bills at the last moment. You're really talking about two very different industries just because they both happen to be talking about union elections. I don't think is necessarily the right way to go about this, and there's a lot of people that showed up prepared to speak to legislation, and then you drop something quite a bit different. And so just to put that out there, just kind of starting at a really high level.
This is a mistaken.
Starting at a really high level, home child care providers aren't employees, you know, obviously in the traditional union dynamic, you'd have an employer-employee relationship. And so, you know, we have a lot of entities that run around the Capitol that aren't necessarily union, but they still lobby, you know, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, a whole bunch of professional associations that lobby quite effectively. So why generally, excuse me, Senator Pappas, why generally should they be unionized? Let's just start there. Why are we attempting to unionize these folks again?
The idea is that it would be an opportunity to improve access to affordable child care, to improve the quality of child care, to improve the stability. And I know all the people who are here provide very high-quality, stable experiences for their children. But there are a lot of people out there who do not have access to the same kind of training and quality that the daycare providers in this room provide, because obviously they really, really care about what they're doing. I think it would help raise their wages in the sense that we're using the word wages to define the child care subsidy fee. I believe it was cut in the last couple years by 11%, 14%.
Jennifer, Madam Chair, the universe
please,
of providers.
Before you start, can you introduce yourself for the record,
yes,
please?
My name is Jennifer Munt, and I'm the public policy director for AFSCME.
Thank you.
The universe of child care providers that we're talking about consists of about 9,000 that receive CCAP funding.
Right.
Half of them are licensed. The other half are legally unlicensed. The people who are legally unlicensed had their rates cut by 14.5% last session. the people who are licensed had their rates cut by 2.5% last session. In Minnesota, the crisis in child care is that it costs so much. The reason it costs so much is because when the rates are cut, providers, in order to support themselves, need to pass those costs off on parents. The more child care providers who receive CCAP that you can keep in business, the more affordable it will be for parents, because our costs are about half what you would pay if you sent your child to a daycare center.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
So we're unionizing, potentially unionizing these folks in order to make it more affordable. Is that right? Is that a summary?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, right. To make the child care subsidy really a subsidy for child care. And if it doesn't cover the cost that the provider needs to make their business work, then the parent is asked to pay a copayment, or the provider has to eat that. And that causes instability and makes it difficult for them to continue to provide the service to the CCAP parent. So they may decide not to do that anymore, and then you lose slots for CCAP kids, and then their parents then can't find child care, so then they have to quit their job. It's just kind of a cascade that can happen. If we as a state don't decide we want to help working parents stay in the workforce.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas.
Senator Peterson.
Why can't professional associations do that, advocate for those things that you just talked
Madam
about?
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, Senator they Pappas. Absolutely can, and I'm sure they do. But the question is, maybe they need a little more help because they weren't so successful over the last couple years. And a lot of these unlicensed homes don't belong to those professional associations, so they have no voice at all.
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, let me give you another example. In AFSCME, we represent thousands of social workers, many of whom, if not most of whom, also belong to the Minnesota Social Work Professional Association. And they do that because they get other things in the association and certain things from the union. They belong to both. Nurses have a history of that as well. We also represent attorneys, prosecutors who belong to the bar and to other associations. So it's not unusual at all for someone to belong to a union and to a professional association as well. And we don't discourage that, and we don't think it's a bad thing.
But it is.
Just to emphasize that no one is mandating anything, that this is a choice. If family daycare businesses want to join, they have the option to do that. No one is forcing them to do that. And just to give another example of associations and unions that coexisted, we had the Minnesota Education Association, and we had the Minnesota Federation of Teachers. One was an association that represented teachers, and one was a union that represented teachers. A few years ago, they decided to merge. But, you know, these things can coexist forever, really.
Thank you. Senator Peterson, did you?
The difference, Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, the difference between the examples, though, that you're pointing out in this example is that you're talking about small business owners. You're not talking about teachers who are already public employees or social workers who are already government employees or public defenders who are already public employees. You're talking about unionizing small business owners. And so on the note of reducing costs, I'm not sure how adding the union dues structure and associated negotiated terms and regulations actually reduces costs. Isn't this just a plan to siphon off dues for the union?
Take it. Madam Chair, child care providers are small business owners. They are smart, they are savvy, and they are extremely dedicated to their work. Unionizing doesn't change that. They still set their rates, they still set their hours, and they still set their terms with parents. It's up to the provider to decide how much the parent can afford to pay. The union doesn't want to get involved in that. But the experience in other states where child care providers are unionized, New York, Oregon, as examples, unions and associations complement one another. And working together, they have produced better outcomes. For example, in Minnesota, associations last session were unable to beat back pay cuts, training cuts, and the fact that we ignored the 6,200 families that are on a waiting list for child care support in order to go to work. Working with the union, we believe the outcome could be better.
One last follow-up, Madam Chair, and then I'll let the other members jump in. So if it truly is about choice, if that's the – then would you be willing to accept an amendment that would allow the choice to pay union dues and fair share for all members?
Why is that not acceptable for unions? Ms. Wick.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry.
No, yes. It's quite all right.
Ms. Seid. Mr. Seid, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. The fair share is a choice. It's a choice. There are costs of representation at work. Fair share is a cost. In addition, and as a part of the bill, as part of PELRA, there's a window period in which employees, and in this case workers, child care providers, can choose to stay in the union or to file for a decertification. So there's a variety of ways in the bill that allow for providers to have a choice between choosing a union, being in a union, or being fair share, or also to opt out of a union during what's called a window period, which is a typical part of the Public Employee Labor Relations Act.
So Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, we are trying to be consistent as much as possible with PELRA. In that sense, like I, for example, I am a teacher at Metropolitan State. I'm an adjunct teacher. So in many sense, I'm my own boss. I figure out my own curriculum. I plan my, you know, I make my lesson plan. But there is a union there, and I pay fair share. Because whether I belong to the union or not, in this case I do not, they still represent me, and they still were able to get me an increase in the adjunct fee that I'm paid. And I just think it's just, you know, fair that if they're going to work for me for my betterment, that I should pay my fair share. And because I choose to be fair share instead of a union member, I don't get to vote. If I paid a little bit more, then I could get more involved in the union and be able to vote.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in follow-up to Senator Peterson's comment, I actually think Senator Pappas, you acknowledged the deep philosophical division on this issue and how some people are disturbed by it. So I really see nothing that could be more fair than allowing people who would choose not to pay the fair share not to have to. So in light of that, I would like to offer the A9 amendment, Madam Chair, and if staff could pass that out. It's very simple. It pertains to both the bills that have been combined together. And it still says notwithstanding Section 179A06, Subdivision 3, family child care providers who are not members of the exclusive representative shall not be required to pay a fair share fee. And then the exact same language applies to the other portion of the bill. And so I think that a lot of the angst and upset over this issue could be resolved if those who want to participate can participate, and those who don't. Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Is there any discussion about the amendment?
Madam Chair, I would oppose the amendment. I think the choice is, if you don't want to be part of the union and pay your fair, or if you don't want to pay your fair share, then you could choose not to take the child care assistant money. But if you're going to take the money from the state, and if the majority of your unit decides they want to be part of the union, then I think you have to pay your fair share.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I think the notion that somebody must be forced to join an organization they don't belong to, or their choice not to do so is to give up a significant part of their livelihood, is actually almost offensive. That's amazing to me that you would make the argument that, well, it's okay, they can just give up a large part of their business. I strongly admonish the members to vote yes on this. Those who want to belong, if the election succeeds, fine. Those who don't have to pay.
Additional discussion about the amendment. Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, just to be clear as well, and I think the members of the committee know this, this isn't a choice to pay or not to pay. This is a choice to pay or pay a little bit less. So you're paying either way. So just for the public record.
Additional discussion.
Madam Chair, I'm not understanding what you said, Senator Peterson, because if you did not, if you do not take child care subsidy, then you're not defined under this chapter. So this chapter does not relate to you at all. Therefore, there's no union dues or fair share. If you decide to take child care subsidy, then you have a right to vote if you want a union or not. And if the majority of those in your voting group decide to go with the union, but you still do not want to belong to the union, you don't have to. But you are expected, as in any other union situation in the state, to pay your fair share.
Does that provide clarification for you, Senator Peterson?
I'll let it be, Madam Chair.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm just a little confused. The bill, Senator Pappas, gives people the right to form a union, right? So we seem a little far foot here because there has to be a decision. It's almost as if Senator Thompson, Senator Peterson think that this is a foregone conclusion that there is going to be a union, and then therefore here's what they want to offer in order if there is. And so I thought, and I could be mistaken, Senator Pappas, Madam Chair, that the bill is really to see if there is an opportunity, if those that are delivering the service to this particular group of children, if they want to form a union, and then if based on all the things that are in the bill, all the thresholds are met, then at that point we kind of then have this discussion about if they want to participate or not. I just want to make sure that for the record we get back to what the bill actually is saying versus this kind of deep philosophical division about unions and not unions. We haven't, to me, crossed that threshold yet. We're still trying to figure out if those that are out there serving this particular population of children want to organize. Is that right, Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair and Senator Hayden, absolutely. And if the providers who are opposed to the bill are the majority of the votes against a union, then there won't be a union. I mean, there's just so many barriers they have to go through. There's so many, like you said, thresholds. 500 people initially to get the list, and then 10% of the list, and then a majority of those that vote that take child care subsidy, and that's out of the 9,000 that approximately are taking child care subsidy. So that's a big hurdle for them to be able to overcome to unionize.
Additional discussion on the amendment that's before us. Hearing no other discussion on the amendment, this amendment, Senator Thompson moves to amend the Delete Everything Amendment to Senate File Number 778 as we have before us. All those in favor, or no, we're doing a roll call vote. And I'll let the assistant take the roll.
Wicklund?
No.
Pappas?
Yes. Excuse me.
No.
Thought I finally won you over.
Round of applause.
Eaton?
No.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Hayden.
Eaton?
No.
Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden?
No.
Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Scalzi? Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
And the vote being 5 yes and 7 no, the amendment fails. Moving on, additional discussion on the vote.
Madam
for
Chair,
Senator
I move
Thompson.
That Senate File 778 be laid on the table.
Senator Thompson moves that it be laid on the table. I need to consult. What do we do? Senator Thompson moves that the bill be laid on the table. Is there any discussion?
There's no discussion.
Okay, we just take a vote. And is this? You didn't request a roll call on this?
Correct.
Okay. All those in favor of laying the bill on the table, Senate File 778, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
I believe that the motion fails.
Division, please.
One moment, please. Senator Thompson has called for a division on his motion to lay the bill on the table. All those in favor, please raise your hand if you're in support of the motion. Okay. All those opposed to the motion, please raise your hand. There being five in support and seven opposing, the motion fails. Moving on.
Madam Chair, if there aren't any other amendments, then I'd like to move that.
Madam Chair, I have a number of amendments.
I don't know who I heard first. Senator Hall,
Thank you. I have a couple questions for a couple of the testifiers. I wonder if we could bring back up Jackie Harrington and Cindy Cunningham.
Jackie Harrington and Cindy Cunningham, if you're present, please, would you return to the table?
Madam Chair, I have a question about process.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was wondering how long are we going to go on this?
We will continue until we finish, although there is another meeting at 6 o'clock.
Madam Chair, I think that members have other commitments at 5:30, yeah. So I would recommend that we wrap up as soon as possible.
Madam Chair.
We are going to another committee, members.
Madam Chair.
Right. Senator Peterson.
I have seven amendments, and I have a number of unanswered questions. The idea that we would take up, in my opinion, one of the biggest union power grabs in recent memory in a 2.5-hour committee with 40 minutes of opposition testimony from testifiers is somewhat offensive, especially in lieu of the fact that we've actually combined bills. I find it wholly offensive that we would move and take a roll call vote on this bill at this moment.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. And just for the record, that we did have 40 minutes of testimony in support of the bill and 40 minutes opposed. So, do we have any other options, Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, I just would like to suggest that we put a time. We have to go to attend, you know, other business, but I would appreciate, Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, if you give us some time, you know, kind of let us know what is the plan here. We need to know.
Members, I feel bad that we didn't say we would. I didn't realize it would take that long, and we would stay until we finished. Would members prefer that we come back on Wednesday? We could carry the bill over until Wednesday. We have the fracking bill to do.
Yes.
So we can't take the whole time. I think it's inconvenient for providers to come
Most
back.
Of providers who are here today, I will speak on behalf of, I cannot come back. I closed my business and inconvenienced seven families today.
Madam Chair.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I obviously we want the public to be able to weigh in as much as possible, but we did have a long list of testifiers. The issue is, members here in the committee would like to air before the public the issues that exist in this bill and what's going on, and I'm certain that Senator Peterson's amendments are calculated to do that. So I think I like the idea of carrying it over into Wednesday, and I'd appreciate that courtesy.
Senator Peterson, then Senator Hayden.
Madam Chair, to the folks who came to testify today, I understand why you'd want to be here. I can assure you that your words have been heard by myself and other members of the committee, and a lot of our line of questioning and amendments and such is going to be in the vein of some of the things that you have mentioned. And so I would urge the committee, and I appreciate Senator Pappas' willingness to come back and hear out those things, and they will be on the public record for everybody in the room. You can go back and read those things and prepare your testimony for the next committee.
Is it possible to ask a clarification? Because there's been one thing that's been stated, and I'm a part of an organization that has been a coalition that has been working against this and has most of the factual oppositional knowledge with it. I will not be able to come again on Wednesday if I have a question of clarification.
Well, I'd like to first settle if we're going to continue or if we're going to...
I think we could hear from the witnesses who are already up here.
Yeah. Okay.
And my recommendation would be we continue on Wednesday, but everyone needs to know that this bill is going to the Human Services Committee if it passes this committee, and then I think possibly the Finance Committee as well.
Senator Hayden.
Well, Madam Chair, I just think that, you know, we do need to hear out all of the members of this committee on the issues that they have. We also need to respect those that have come, and I want to be sure with Senator Peterson that, you know, this is the Minnesota Senate, and we need to be respectful of all that have come to talk about this bill one way or the other. I think that that is extremely important. And, Madam Chair, I do find it offensive when Senator Peterson says that this is a power grab. I don't think that that is the appropriate language that we should use in the Minnesota Senate. If he is opposed to the bill, I'm comfortable with staying however long we need to stay and go through however many amendments that he wants to offer. But I do want us to remind Senator Peterson of the decorum of the Minnesota Senate and make sure that we are respecting everybody who has come to testify and to witness and to talk about this bill.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and just to remind members, I believe Wednesday evening is when we are doing the joint House-Senate caucus for the regent election. So that will shorten the time that will be allowed for on Wednesday.
Madam Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
If I may, I would like to propose that we finish tonight. I just need to know. I mean, I can, you know, I need to take care of what I need to take care of. But, Madam Chair, I know that Wednesday we have a few things that we really need to do. So knowing how we voted already, I think you know what's going to happen. So I think that it is important that we hear what, you know, the members have to say. You know, we have 45. I don't know if you want to put an hour into this or something, but I do think it's important if we have how many, Senator Peterson?
Madam Chair, are there other members that need
seven
to
amendments?
Leave at a certain time?
Madam Chair,
Senator Wicklund,
we do have the House and Human Service Policy is reconvening tonight at 6 o'clock. So I know I'm a member of that, and I think that Senator Eaton as well. So with respect to the issues that we have on Wednesday, I do think it's fair to hear out all of the amendments and all of the questions and testimony of the other members of this committee, and we are running up against another committee's time frame that has important business as well.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just recommend we hear from the witnesses who are here, and then we adjourn the committee and carry the bill over until Wednesday.
Okay, and I would just ask you how we should decide which, if we will be able to get through all the witnesses, Senator Peterson.
Just these two.
Okay. So did you have particular questions for these two witnesses? That you
Madam Chair, I'll let the...
It kind of went around the room a little bit.
We did.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Witness, I heard in your testimony, Ms. Harrington and Ms. Cunningham, that you felt threatened and the possibility of losing your nonprofit or something like that. Can you elaborate more on what that was all about and where that threat was coming from?
Madam Chair, I don't know how to do this, but addressing both of you. Union organizers approached in our area, at that time it was SEIU, so speaking from that experience, and then also connecting, because our associations are connected, hearing from other associations, when we started speaking with each other and learning about the union issue and associations developing their position statements and what they were hearing from membership, were coming out with that they weren't going to support. And the union movement and organizers came back to us saying, if you choose to do that, then it that will jeopardize your nonprofit status. You can only be neutral or say nothing, was the message we received back. We, of course, did research, and that was not the case. And so FCCI did move forward and take our position statement as non-supportive.
Ms. Cunningham.
I can testify to the fact that the two providers, Cindy Cunningham, excuse me, the two providers that spoke in support as of last week sent emails to board members of our association telling them that they should not be voicing their opinions or their comments about unionization, that they needed to get glasses and a dictionary, and that maybe they're Republicans, and just basically have consistently told our county association that we need to stay neutral, and that neutral, the message strongly is silent. I personally have had rumors and statements made up about me by the union organizers and those present that I am speaking falsely, that I don't have facts, and that no one should listen to me.
Madam Chair, I do think we're on dangerous ground here. I think that if there are emails that could substantiate that, but I think to kind of, and I think that that would be appropriate, but I think to kind of say that there's rumor and innuendo that union members are threatening folks, I think that that is on dangerous ground. So I just want us to stay on the bill, and that if there are things that is part of the testimony or pieces that they want to bring forward, but I just want us to be very careful. I'm very uncomfortable with that line of questioning, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hayden. Senator Hall.
And that's where I was going. I wonder if you could submit those emails or letters, and we could keep that as part of the record. Okay, we have those?
It's going to take me a while. I have a really old phone.
I have a problem with bullying, whether it comes in schools or whether it comes in unions or any place else. But if ask me or anybody else is doing stuff like that or telling people they cannot speak up and coming against free speech, and what I'm hearing from the organizations is it's coming against women, I'm having a problem with that kind of stuff. And I think I would have a problem with that kind of a group overseeing and unionizing and controlling these groups, especially with the children involved. And so I think I just want to make sure that that stuff's not happening. If it is, I think we need to deal with it appropriately.
Thank you, Senator Hall. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To this point, when this subject was brought up several years ago, I heard the same comments that were made in my office when I was a state representative about the issue of unionizing, that members of the union had come and basically talked to child care providers in threatening words and statements to the point of making them feel like they had better not be involved with this if they weren't going to be part of the supporting. So I'm concerned about that, not only from the standpoint of being at here today, but that it has been going on for several years.
Senator Hall.
Madam Chair, thank you. This will be my last comment, I think. I just want to say thank you to Ms. Harrington and Ms. Cunningham and others that came today that did feel threatened, that you were willing to come. You had the courage to get here anyway with those that you felt threatened you in the room. That's not an easy thing to do for especially women. So thank you so much.
Senator Pappas, is that or are there any other questions for these two testifiers?
Did you want to?
I have two things I would like to clarify. If
please proceed.
Okay. I tried to make this clear in my testimony, but as complicated as it is, the really concerning piece is that the unionization is happening under the umbrella, excuse me, Cindy Cunningham, of providers who get paid by CCAP. I really challenge legislators to look carefully and clearly at that. I don't get paid, the families do. Once that union, it may not happen, we need to prepare this legislation as if it is going to happen, because that's the only protection we then have. If exclusive bargaining rights are granted to this group that's being formed, that does affect me. They are being given licensing rights, not strictly just rights over bargaining on CCAP. That's a huge distinction. I will be affected by licensing rights. It is not an entity of providers that exists in any other fashion. The other piece is that as providers, to the way that I end up without a family, without getting paid by CCAP, is what happened last November. I had two families who that were successful through education and jobs to be able to be removed from CCAP. I had nothing to do that with that except that I supported them by being their provider and helping with their children. They were done. They're still my clients. They now pay me directly. I got the same rate no matter either way. The CCAP rate is a public policy rate. It is not mine as a provider. I challenge legislators to look carefully at that. You're going into a very dangerous process. In my opinion, as a citizen, I don't want any profession to make these decisions. It needs to be the public and the legislators.
Thank you. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I'm searching for anything in the legislation that says anything about licensing. It does say grievance issues and child care assistance reimbursement rates. But I don't see anything about licensing. So if that's not clear and we need to have more discussion about that, we can certainly do that.
So is it strictly CCAP and grievances?
Grievance.
I apologize.
Policies and other matters relating to services.
Policy and other matters?
Are you looking at the delete all? I'm sorry. We did. Okay. There was criticisms and concerns, and when we put together the delete all, we tried to address some of those. So I think by laying the bill over until Wednesday, we'll have a chance for people to see the delete all amendment and have some of their fears.
I still do not understand how we are expanding options for families by giving me the pressure that I can't take a CCAP family if I don't want to be a part of a union.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Cunningham. I would take the consensus seems to be we will lay the bill over. We will lay Senate file number 778 as amended with the delete everything amendment over, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.